Welcome to SciTech Culture with Steve Kern and Ben Warner, where we examine science, technology and culture in the 21st century. Visit our website at scitechculture.com.
Well, I guess it was inevitable, prices soaring and whatnot because of the RAM and SSD crisis, all of that precious stock being hoovered up by big tech companies to make AI data centers, forcing up the prices of those components, which then in turn has a knock-on effect to PCs, laptops, tablets, everything you can think of with that. And now Apple's the latest one to have joined the bandwagon of raising prices across a lot of their products. Interesting, there are some exceptions, but we can get into that a bit later. Australian dollar wise, it's somewhere between 150 and 500 bucks, something like that. The Mac Studio apparently had the biggest jump up to I believe it was a $2,000 difference between the previous price and the current price. One can cynically say that, Apple's got a massive margin on all its products. It could potentially just eat this, but then the flip side of it being that the cost of all of these components has gone up so much that, that it becomes unsustainable from a business point of view to keep going from that perspective. I won't say I'm not disappointed in this, because you realize that once the price goes up to that point, it's not ever coming back down like that. This is the new baseline of what we're looking at.
Yeah, well, I think you're right there. And I think, the motive behind Apple raising the prices, as you say, is probably to get ahead of the curve, and because they know that for the next 5 years at least, the market will be tight for them. So, we're seeing unprecedented demand for these chips for memory storage. And Apple used to be, I think they used to have 15 or 20% of the total orders globally. So they actually used to be able to do really good deals. Not that we ever got the benefit of those, you might suggest, although we got premium products at premium prices. But obviously now with the demand across the board for data centers, they've lost that edge to negotiate on prices, and they're just passing it along to us. And like I say, obviously they anticipate it's going to be a tight market for years ahead, and the only response is to jack up prices now, and then they probably won't need to jack them up again, you'd hope. But what are all these data centers doing that they're not already doing?
I was going to say that, just before I get into that the iPhone was and the Apple Watch were the only things that were left untouched, but the rumor being that when the new iPhones and the new Apple Watches come out in September, that's when they'll get the price increase. Apparently tied because they've already got, carrier deals and all this sort of stuff, that it's just going to be too complicated to mess with the pricing in that particular instance. So just wait for the next round of models to come out or something like that.
Oh, okay. If you say so.
Well, this is what I read, I don't know.
It's what Tim Cook told us before he checks out.
Exactly. But this is the interesting point that I'd like to make, that we should have recorded our discussion before we got on, because when we were talking about AI and its impacts. But one thing I did want to point out, and I think we were touching on that before, which was this isn't good. It adds fuel to the fire for public backlash against AI in general. When you start hitting, a bit like the Iran war and the oil price goes up, and all of a sudden you're paying attention to the Iran war because that's the cost of, because it's raising the cost of you fueling your car every week. We all have to have devices now, phones, tablets, laptops. It's the way of the world. If you go out there and all of a sudden you're paying 30, 40, 50% more for the exact same piece of kit, you know, and you then multiply that out across the population who are buying these things, they'll just chalk it up to another thing, you know, another black mark against AI's name, leaving aside everything else that, you know, does it actually work as advertised? Does it actually make you feel more productive, or does it make you actually more productive? Is it actually going to get any more accurate, or is it just getting worse? Is it being foisted on us? I mean, I know that's a whole other discussion, but I feel like this price thing hits people in the hip pocket, and then it's like, well, you know, it's more, it's not just against AI, it's also big tech. It's like a tag against them.
It's interesting you say that. I think for some people, sure, you know, who can see through what is, I think, in a lot of ways a con. But, and we're all paying the price for it now, as you point out. But I think for a lot of people, they don't see that issue at all. And because of that, yeah, it's probably not going to prompt the backlash that it should. I mean, I think, you know, and this is something else that with the AI revolution is that what they're selling us is really unclear to me. I mean, large language models are a lot of fun, I guess, and great for writing that report at work and whatever else. But I really don't think that the benefits are actually very clear for that sort of AI. And the fact that they're basically inflating the cost of all the products now that are essential, I'm not so sure that's a really good scenario.
Well, that's a good way to actually describe it in general, actually, as far as I can see.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that one.
Don't be worrying about Skynet, people. It's probably going to be an idiocracy version of Skynet that we'll have to be worried about. So it'll be a lot more stupid, trust me. But continuing on the AI topic, this podcast you sent to me, The Anthropic Ethicist, and bringing, you know, ethics to the way, I guess, their large language models are being worked on or trained or whatnot. I thought it was an interesting discussion that you sent through to me earlier in the week. It was a very odd discussion, though, because on multiple levels, obviously I can see from a maybe technical perspective, they want to make sure that, you know, maybe it's spitting out answers that aren't going to cause problems, shall we say, in the ethics department. That's a much more black and white interpretation of it. But I was also having a bit of a struggle just with what she was actually saying conceptually and what it actually meant. Like, and I know we've talked about this, but the idea of applying ethics to what is essentially a statistical probability generator, which doesn't have any real sense of ethics. So it's really just a case of humans programming this thing to, you know, reasonably approximate, you know, an answer that it spits out that's going to fit to the standards that the humans want, even though it's got no intent or understanding or anything of it. It felt like a very odd kind of way to look at it, let's put it that way, because I just didn't see what, you know, it just felt odd conceptually, I guess. I don't know if I'm making sense there.
No, I think you're right. And I think for me, what I found, I guess, the missing piece in the puzzle was at no stage did they actually discuss how the model was working, the technical aspects of the model, so that you could understand how giving Anthropic, or Claude in this instance, giving it a perspective on how the person using the large language model might be feeling or the situation they might be in. They didn't really talk about how the AI could interpret that. And that can only be done by looking at language, I guess searching its database for similar phrases or similar euphemisms or whatever it might be in there, and then extrapolating, oh, this person's under stress because if I don't get this report done by tomorrow, they're going to sack all of us in our team. You know, So I found that very interesting. I found it very interesting also because I found her very impressive as an ethicist for the most part. We'll probably cover the bit where I thought she was a bit weird, but I found her very impressive, although she didn't explain how the ethics actually worked in practice technically with the large language model. And I think I was actually quite shocked that Anthropic would have somebody of that level working for them. You know, I guess maybe it's a cheap sort of shot, but I can't imagine Meta has anyone equivalent.
You'd wonder why they wouldn't, for PR purposes. Or certainly, you know, feeling comfortable that AI can take your job, which I believe is where we're...
Well, that's where we're heading with it. The bit where she got to speaking about how AI could do her job, and I thought that made a lot of sense because in ethics, you know, effectively there are rules. You put some rules into an AI and that AI, you know, they're the guardrails we talk about. And but this was interesting because she spent most of the first part of the talk actually explaining that you didn't want hard guardrails. You wanted interpreted guardrails, which is more and more human-like. I wouldn't say, I think you and I both agree, Ben, that this is only a simulation or a facsimile of consciousness or humanity. It's not a real...
Giving the appearance of, as opposed to actually being.
And I guess this is where, you know, in many cases... they're starting to pass the Turing test in that AI can give responses now that are very human-like. And if you're not switched onto that, it's very easy to believe that they are human responses. So ethically, that is a very grey area because once we have an AI that starts to simulate aspects of human interaction and human understanding, I don't think that actually equates to consciousness. But if humans perceive that as consciousness, I think that actually becomes far more dangerous than AI itself ever assuming consciousness. Once humans perceive a probabilistic machine that appears to be human as human, I think that's the rabbit hole, which is the really scary one. Not Skynet, not AI pushing a nuke button, but just the fact that then effectively we lose grip on what humanity actually is.
And that might be part of the ethical dilemma. There you go. I was waiting to throw that in somewhere. That... unlike other tech tools, this is not being, it's almost like this is not being, and I should say marketed, because that's, it's, and part of the, what is so infuriating about this is that I think there's an attempt that this is not just another tech tool. This is going to be, you know, up to the level of conversing with you like an assistant or something, you know, up to the, like you can't tell the difference between, you know, the two of us talking and, you know, each of us talking to our AI assistance, you know, making us lunch in the background or whatever. And I just feel like maybe, you know, that, you know, it's not that being so preoccupied whether or not they didn't stop to think if they should. It's like hitting like the human, that sort of this is what our behavior is, this is what makes our societies work, with our ability to interact with each other. Leave aside all the polarization because of social media and all of that. Under normal circumstances, we'd find ways to work together better. And this just seems like yet another thing that could get in the way of that.
Well, I can't get past the fact that you can extrapolate this back to 2007 and the GFC, where you've got companies too big to fail. And there's, let's be honest, there's too much money at stake with AI for it to fail. And that's why we have this marketing that's telling us that it's the answer and the future, and we need to spend all this money on data centers that I don't understand what that expansion is truly going to achieve, apart from keeping all my data in a data center and allowing an AI agent to make advertising exactly for me and delivering it directly to me, so I go out and buy something I don't need that they need me to buy. If that's not dystopian, I don't know what is.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, Steve, am I wrap it up there? You know, maybe I'll just go and manually draw a picture with pen and paper rather than going into a chatbot and prompting it to draw the picture for me. What do you think?
Stay creative, Ben. Stay human. Don't outsource that to AI.
Absolutely. And no one else should either. All right. So that's it for this week's episode. We'll catch you next time.